Hi, I'm Jen Suliafu, and I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. Life is an exciting game with many twists and turns. It gets really good when we begin to learn how it works and how to win. I believe that no matter where someone's life is at, we have the power to make radical shifts to create a life that truly honors us. I live for awakenings, so let's get to it, darlings.
Welcome back. We are going through a massive shift on the planet, and it's such an exciting time to be alive. Things are also, of course, really challenging right now, but I believe the people that are really going to thrive during this time are the people that are honing in on their creativity and sharing their gifts with the world. I'm really looking forward to my conversation today with someone who is called an industry disruptor. Talk about creativity. This man embodies living passion and sharing his unique gifts with the world. He's an inspiring entrepreneur that has opened over 65 restaurants. That's crazy. And is making quite a splash in the world. So welcome, Michael McHenry. Hi.
Oh, well, I am so happy to be here. And thank you for that kind of intro and share. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think the individuals that are out there in today's market that are like making a big splash for whatever those reasons may be. And I think the more authentic you are, the bigger that splash. And so
just
honored to be here with you today and excited to have a conversation that hopefully brings value to everyone who's listening in. So
awesome. Okay, so I have to tell you, and I have to tell everyone listening, how you popped up on my radar.
Yeah.
We haven't even had this conversation yet. So I go to lunch with my girlfriends. We go probably once a month. And I have a friend, she's a foodie. She's always telling us about these cool restaurants. And she's like, let's go try this place. And she was like, you guys, we have to go to this place. I'll book us a reservation and we'll go, right? So we were like, okay, cool. Wherever you tell us to go, we'll show up. So we go. And at the time, we're trying to think of when this was. It was a bit ago. I don't know when you opened Sunday's Best. How long has it been there?
So it's been 5 months.
Okay.
So we're coming up on 6 months right now. So
okay.
A little over 5 months. Yes.
So that's pretty recent. But I feel like there were still a lot of places where it was hit or miss, where you would go and it felt like the Twilight Zone. Like you would still
totally.
Go into places and you're like, ugh, this
happened
is like
to me today. Happened to me today.
Get it? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's still happening. Yes. Absolutely.
Totally happening. Yeah.
But the world is super Twilight Zone-y ever since, 2020, of course, but that's how it was. It definitely then. And the moment, Michael, that I stepped into your restaurant, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. I am a feng shui consultant, so I'm always like paying attention
okay.
to the energy anyways.
Sure.
And I was like, wow, this place is super cool, right? And we go, we sit down, and of course the restaurant experience, it's an experience. Like people don't think about all the layers that go into your experience as you go
sure.
out to eat. But I think about it because I too was in the restaurant industry for many years. I opened restaurants. I was a corporate trainer. And it was just such a beautiful experience. But then I noticed this guy. He's super charismatic, super dynamic. And he was making eye contact with people. He looked like he was in charge. But then I saw him blessing tables, cleaning tables. And I'm like, who the heck is this guy? Like, what is his role here,
yeah.
right? And then as me and my girlfriends, we were talking, we were like, this feels like we're like in New York City. This doesn't feel like we're in Sandy, Utah. And then I'm like, who owns this place? Like, who's the owner? Now, I've gone out to eat so many times. I've never, ever picked up my phone and looked up who is the
yeah.
owner. And I did in your restaurant. And then there you are. And that's the guy cleaning the table. And I was so struck by that because I've worked in restaurant industries. I've worked under many managers who they would not lift a finger. That was the busser's job. They'll grab the host, they'll grab the server, whoever they can find, but not themselves and certainly not the owner. And so I was really intrigued with you from the get-go and really impressed and inspired. I was really inspired.
Yeah.
I could tell that you really care about your business. And so that's why I'm really excited to have this convo with you today.
Well, that's great. So that's when I asked, like, hey, had we connected before? Because socially, you build these big communities, and sometimes you feel like you've had like an actual, like, tangible or physical engagement. Oftentimes on social, just because you become so kind of present with people's personality and video and the things that are going on. And so I love hearing that experience, because Jen, that's exactly what we expect and I expect for us to curate in our very spaces. We're very experiential. I mean, the McHenry Group, like, we are an experiential concept creation in the restaurant vertical, and it is so much more important than just a good bite and a pretty wall and great flooring and a cool brand and a cool icon and the right offerings and, you know, this cool space and a great team and good leadership and capitalization. Actually, all of those things are the recipe. And the biggest compliment that we get in our restaurants and our spaces are how they feel. Like, when you walk in, they're like, it just feels good in here. And people can tell me my pancakes are delicious, or our tomahawk's wonderful, or honey pepperoni is great, or that Tiffany has a wonderful smile, or that, you know, Emily is there tableside with me, or Will was the most incredible server. All of those things make me just over the top. Or your brand's so cool and Brunch Me Hard, it's so fun, and the neon and this and that and the full dining rooms. But when someone says, like, Michael, I just feel good when I'm in here, I'm like, we won, because I feel like that is true hospitality. Hospitality and creating that environment, if it furthers your day positively, we've won. And oftentimes that just means get the burger right. And oftentimes that means just have a clean table. Oftentimes that just means have a dining room that's open, right? Or a team member there to be ready for it. But when you start to check all the boxes like you expressed, that is a true McHenry restaurant, in my opinion. And I don't know it any other way. And I only know how to bus tables and engage with people and make thoughtful contact, because I don't know how to be in business without guests and customers. And I don't believe that any business owner should know that. Like, you have to realize that we truly are in business, and it's impossible to do it without people that vote for us and love for us. And I have a huge passion for the anthropology of space as well. So when you go into my restaurants, you'll see that every detail matters to me. I sit from the guest perspective. I sit from the owner's perspective. I sit from the perspective of viability and connectivity. And so I appreciate what you shared about our spaces, because it's most definitely done with much intent.
Yeah, it is something special. It really is. What you created is something truly unique, truly special. And we now have plans, me and my girlfriend, to go to all of your restaurants, because you have other ones as well, right?
But we do, absolutely.
I love that you are so relatable. And that's what I'm saying is, like, it felt like outside, out those doors, it's like the Twilight Zone, but then you step in there and it's like, oh, this is a party. This is fun. We can enjoy life still, even though there's a lot of weird, crazy, challenging things going on in the world, you know? And so I feel like that's really the point to going out to eat anyways. Otherwise, why would you go?
Well, that was something really as well, Jen, that really evolved during 2020, right? During this kind of pandemic time. And, you know, there was a greater presence for me to get even closer and get tableside. And so over the last 2 years, I've just made it a point to get in our dining rooms and spend time during the peaks, like engaging with people and welcoming people and reaffirming that they are in an owner-operated environment, that the true owner proprietor takes it seriously and wants your vote and is there to earn it and grow. And being tableside like that gives me such an interesting perspective, because I get to meet you and ultimately these types of opportunities, but I get to see what people are eating and not eating. I get to see firsthand what the experience is like, and I can overhear conversations that are taking place. And oftentimes it's very mindless for me, because wiping a table is not capitalizing a new project, right? Or like wiping a table or busing a table is not onboarding a new talent. It allows me just the opportunity to kind of just decompress and be all in on the guest experience. And it has driven design decisions, layout decisions, menu decisions, table settings, spacing between tables. I cannot tell you the benefits that have come from just literally wiping a table down as the owner. And so I appreciate you sharing that with me.
Yes. Oh, I love that. So I'm always so intrigued with people's journeys. Yeah. Okay. So I want to know, like, how did this happen? Okay. How did you get to here? Tell us about your other restaurants and where did you grow up? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you like the flash. What's interesting is that I'm actually from Sandy, Utah. So I've not lived in Sandy for many years, but about 20 years later here, I'm bringing one of my favorite restaurants back to my own neighborhood. So I grew up about 3 to 4 miles from Sunday's Best in Sandy. I had really no aspiration to be in the restaurant business. I mean, aside from being, you know, a consumer, like I love food, especially like back then, anything deep fried. And if it was a crunchy, salty carb dipped in a sauce, I was for it. As a kid, I was all about it. And interestingly enough, bowling is my sport. So bowling got me into business. Bowling got me into school. Bowling really taught me the principles of being very goal-oriented. I mean, how can you become more goal-oriented than just knocking all 10 pins down on the first try? Like it's just, it was very simple for me. Knock them all down. Back up, knock them all down again. It was just, it was a process for me. And I didn't realize, Jen, how the effects that that sport would have on my life and how goal-oriented every bit of my life became from starting out with one ball and 10 pins. Like it just, it literally, I respect it and honor it far more today than I ever did before. And that was really my entry into the restaurant business. You know, not just eating French fries and deep fried, you know, chicken tenders at bowling alley cafes, but I went out on the early like amateur tour as a kid, 18 years old, did pretty well, came back. Only thing I had ever known was working in bowling centers and pro shops. So I came back as a young entrepreneur. I went to Fat Cats, which is based here in Salt Lake City, and I approached them about getting a space to have a bowling pro shop. That was McHenry Sports Shop. Quickly opened that, and about 6 months into it, the owners of the bowling center at the time said, hey, we have this idea for a restaurant. I'm like, okay, well, you're talking to me, like idea of a restaurant. Cool. Awesome. Like moving on. And they're like, and we want you to run it. And I was like, you want me to run it? And they basically told me in that conversation, I was way too talented to have this small bowling pro shop in a bowling alley. And at that moment in real time, I felt like my dream was being crushed. I'm like, you're going to tell me that I'm too good for what I love. I mean, I was like, in that point in real time, in my mind, I'm like, are you kidding me? Crushing my dreams? I'm going to own this place now. And about 30 minutes later, I accepted this role. And that restaurant at that time was called Costa Azul, what is today Costa Vida. And Costa Vida has over 100 units across the country. They're having their most relevant years today. And I got the crazy opportunity to be in store. It was really store 2.0, but we call it like the Costa Vida start there in Provo. So I got a chance to be the first general manager as a young kid, working for these very talented and seasoned entrepreneurs, and half came from the world of entrepreneurship and business, and the other half came from high level of culinary management and expertise and restaurant ownership. And they tucked me under their wing as an underdog. And 7 years later, you know, we'd opened over 40 locations, and you know, here I was as a young 25-year-old kind of student of the game, running multiple restaurants across the Southwest. And from that point, just progressed, and then found myself spending the past 6 to 8 years before launching the McHenry Group, I was on the C-suite of emerging brands. So CMO, COO, president, whatever that meant for that various brand. And then about 3 years ago, I launched the McHenry Group for the very reason that we opened this with, which is I opened the McHenry Group because I was so far removed. I was 10,000 feet removed from seeing you and your friends and serving you tableside. And I was so far removed from designing that true space and be able to drive the guest experience. And what I believed is that true feeling of hospitality, because I was at 10,000 feet running multiple restaurants at high volume across the country with oftentimes more than 1,000 team members. And I think you call it growth, self-awareness, maturity, whatever it might be. I found that my reward center is concept creation. My reward center is creating an experience and the very essence that you and your friends experience tableside that I didn't know directly, but indirectly, that is my goal to create. And so I launched the McHenry Group 3 years ago, and we solely focus on creating and introducing, I should say, introducing what we believe are kind of market relevant or market changing brands. And we proof the viability, meaning we bring them to market, we launch, we create viability, and then we take it to scale and we look for an exit partner. We look for someone that we believe can take the mission and the vision with the right resources and workforce architecture and operations and run that brand to the moon while we continue to build what we believe is the country's next breakout brand. And so currently we own Sunday's Best, which is where we met. I believe it's not only Salt Lake City's, but the country's next brunch highlight and banger restaurant. I think it's just so exciting and so fun, and brunch is so experiential. And then we own Ginger Street in the heart of Salt Lake City on Broadway and State Street. And that is Southeast Asian hawker-style street food, which I think just so naturally, so organically checks all the boxes of so many dietary choices and restrictions. It's high in vegetable content. It's high in vegan items naturally without having to adopt and change a menu. There's a high level of gluten-free options without having to say, hey, we're this restaurant and we just so happen to have this gluten-free menu. Or, hey, we are this restaurant, but here's our vegan item. Or, hey, we're this restaurant and here's a section for vegetarians. What I love about Southeast Asian fare is that it just checks itself so naturally, like so organically. And it's hip and vibrant. And so the environment there and the branding itself, I think, is as spicy as the Thai chili, you know, that most definitely spices up the pad Thai. So it's exciting to have that brand. And then Dirty Bird Hot Chicken, which we jumped onto the hot chicken craze. And I think we brought the hottest brand to the marketplace, which we just exited in the past few months. And so the McKinney Group now has a minority position in that brand. We launched it 6 weeks pre-pandemic. So we opened our first location just 6 weeks before the shutdown. And we more than quadrupled revenue over the course of the next year and found ourselves 20 months in with an eight-figure acquisition sale of a one-unit brand that's literally on its way to the moon. So super, super cool. Very close to the chest. Life-changing for so many involved and excited about that. And then we have Oakwood Fire Kitchen in Draper, which is our Neapolitan style pizza pasta restaurant. And really what Oak is to the neighborhood of Draper in South Valley is it is truly there to reinterpret or kind of reintroduce what it means to be a true neighborhood bistro. You walk in, the people that are working there, they go to school there, they grew up there, their parents are there, the chef lives in the neighborhood. I mean, it is that restaurant. And that was important to me. I felt like even pre-pandemic, we were coming as a society, we were coming back to this place of really, whether we knew it or not, it was time to slow down. Whether we knew it or not, we wanted some greater connectivity. Whether we knew it or not, we actually wanted to know who was sitting at the table next to us. And so I sensed that. I didn't sense the pandemic time, but what I sensed is this place that the community is just craving, the sociology of our community is craving connectivity. And so that's what I love about casual dining. Like, I love to connect people through great food. And so Oak was our entry into the market. It was the first restaurant that we acquired and revamped. And it really birthed what we're talking about today. And to think that we've done all of that in a matter of 3 years and spent two of them literally under a pandemic, I feel like all we've done is get warmed up. Like, our best years are in front of us. And so here we are. That's a little taste of it. I probably took a little longer than expected, but that's the journey right there.
Wow. The thing that I love so much about that story is I love that there's no excuses. You know, you can't blame anything on anybody else. Like, you say that you launched 6 weeks prior to the pandemic. Okay. So here's the thing. I'm having so many conversations with people right now because I'm paying attention and I find this movie that we're watching right now unfold on planet Earth is so fascinating. If we open our eyes and we pay attention, it's really fun and exciting to pay attention to things. So I'm driving down the road and I see this restaurant's closed on the corner. Okay. They've been around for decades. Okay.
Yep.
Then I'm driving down the road and I see a fast food restaurant that just closed down on the next corner. The other one is a sit down restaurant, then the fast food restaurant. They have been in business for decades. A grocery store in my neighborhood who's been in business for decades closed down. What is the common denominator between these businesses? And how come you can go into one business and no one's there and you can go to Sunday's Best and you can't get a table? Why is that?
Well, I think here's a few things. I can't speak on behalf of everyone, but what I can tell you is that the darlings of the market, the staples of the marketplace that were that place, they were cornerstone for years and years and years, they got tired and they got complacent and they didn't have to show up for it anymore. The neighborhood showed up for them. And the moment they had to pivot and show up was the moment they went, I'm done. Or I don't have the gas, the resources, the experience for it. They can't say resources because there were so many resources available. I mean, we were turning resources away mid-pandemic in many ways. And so I think that the reality is I think that a lot got tired. I think a lot worked in place and I think a lot didn't know how they got there. And so if they didn't know how they got there, they didn't know how to hang on to it. And so I think that was part of it. I will say this, I think today more than ever, people make their decision long before first bite. And we recognize that in a very socially driven community and society. And we started spending all of our time where the attention is. So we took our brands, our voice, our experiences to social. And we were doing that leading up to the pandemic, and now we do it radically well. But I felt like we just started to really sell our essence and our brand and our experience and our culture, as well as our craft, long before First Bite. And it was one of the biggest things we ever did, was create a very relevant presence online that translates into our building. And what we found with Sunday's Business as an example, Jen, is that people want to be around people. And all of a sudden we started showing full dining rooms and 200 people are dining together, when you, right now you literally cannot go and sit in a Wendy's if you wanted to, right now, today. But 200 plus people are eating and crushing pancakes and crushing champagne and celebrating with friends and taking pictures literally within a mile. And I think, to me, it's just a matter of connectivity. And I think we took advantage of a time when people were running for the hills and getting under their tables, or they were bowing out. We were saying, listen, we're here for the people. Because I believe that there is nothing greater that contributes to the culture of your community than a restaurant or bar, good or bad. And we understand that and take responsibility. And people expect or rely on those places, those cornerstones, those staples of community, especially during times of stress and chaos. And we are that place of normalcy, right? We're that place that you can count on and expect. And I can tell you that I knew there was a greater responsibility for me to just show up and smile at people and create that environment. So I think a huge part of it is we just started celebrating people when it felt like everybody else was scared of them. And I think that was a bit of our recipe. I really do. I think that's a big part of our success, is that we celebrate getting people together, you know, under these conditions.
Yeah, that is everything. So you hit on a couple of things, like complacency, which is also stagnant. I never went to any of these places I'm talking about that I'm seeing closing down there. I didn't go there because in the past, if I've ever been there, which I have a long time ago, just stagnant. You know what I mean? Just stagnant.
Sure.
Existing, not living, but existing, right? And then
they're dark and kind of,
just like you can tell they're not excited. Some of them just got too big and then they just were there, right? But then another thing that you hit on that's so key right now, there's people showing up with either fear or love. And to me, you're saying, you know what, like that was obviously you showing up with love, with your love of your art, love of food, love of a good time, love of connection, love of people, love of your employees, of your community, all of it, or fear, right? Right now, the fear is insane and it can be a little like frustrating, because like you're not going to win if you're in fear. Ever, regardless of whether it was 2020 or before, being on the road of fear is only going to swallow you up and pull you down, you know? And so,
yeah, no question, it becomes anchoring. I think there's ways to take that and channel that into like these good positives. But I do have to agree with you. I think because for me, and I've shared this on many other podcasts, I've shared this in writing as well as just in reality, that I have this sense of calmness during this time the whole time. Like I was never in fear. I was like, I had this self-convincing narrative for a long time that I was built for battle. And then all of a sudden I was in battle and I went like, okay, wait a minute. I feel like I'm capable and I feel like I'm resourceful and I feel like I'm smart and present and I don't have the biggest treasury. I'm probably the most tenacious within my industry and within my neighborhood and community for sure. And that gave me a responsibility. And so I started not only showing up for us in the McHenry Group, but I started showing up for all the small business owners in my communities, hosting roundtables and sharing resources and pulling people together and getting on the news and saying, hey, listen, I don't need more resources. What I need is just an activated community that can make decisions on their own. And I want to keep my dining rooms open. And that was another big part of this, is that we never closed. I never closed any of the restaurants. And I think, was there risk associated with that? Sure. But keeping 140 team members employed and keeping them stimulated and they're protecting their livelihoods and protecting our mission and brand and being able to show up for a community that needs it the most was really, I think, the accelerant of our success, that we just never closed. And there was a time in downtown Salt Lake City, there was literally a 2-week period that no one was down there but my team and my truck on the sidewalk. Like I parked on Broadway and State Street, I parked on the sidewalk so I could walk out the door, fill it up with meals and drive them to the hospital for the Healthy and Full initiative. But there was a 2-week period where there was no one else downtown. Like I wouldn't see anybody else but us It was crazy.
Wow.
Craziness. So I went a little deeper there, but
wow,
there's no question there were those two sides. And yep. I'm quite tenacious and highly driven, but my heart is bigger than all of it. There's no question.
Yeah. So before 2020 happened, I always look at the Chinese astrology, the Western astrology, the numerology, sure. all the energy of what I'm seeing for yeah. the upcoming year. And one totally. Thing that I kept hearing was an underlying theme of 2020, which you really hit on, was that people were going to really start to connect again, And we were going to come back to that root. Like, I mean, how many times do people not even know who's living next door to them anymore? You know, it's, yeah. it's part of
sure.
our culture that we've gotten into. But when you talk about you being the only one downtown, it makes me think about, we actually have a 21-year-old son, and he was working at a restaurant right across from Ginger Street when the pandemic hit. And I don't think they ever reopened. I think they closed their doors yeah. forever. Is there a certain percentage that you know of that has closed? Do you think that?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, there? Yeah. So I can kind of shift. So I'm also an executive board member of the Utah Restaurant Association. I know it kind of seems like to be on the Restaurant Association board, you should be like over 60. I help that median age a lot. So I shifted up a bit, but I've been a member there for several years and became an executive board member within like the last 3 years or so. And over 550 restaurants and bars have closed in Utah, which is about 10%. We had about 5,000 or so leading into it. I think today with like today's growth, we're somewhere around 4,700. But yeah, 550 restaurants and bars were known to close due to pandemic conditions that have not reopened. Now, there are new restaurants, as you know, and there's other restaurants going to scale, and there's some rebirth and some growth taking place there. But over 500 closed. And when you think about that, I mean, Utah's a captive audience, 3.2 million people. Yes, it's growing. Yes, it's wonderful in so many ways, but it still has quite a captive audience because it's not overwhelmingly big, right? I mean, Metro Phoenix has more people in it than the, you know, the entire state of Utah. And so when you think about that, 550 is a lot. That's a lot. Now that 550, do I know all the circumstances? Of course not. Can I generalize them? Of course. You know, I think that some were probably tired and on their way out and didn't want to continue to do it. And others were like, I'm bowing out and taking the excuse. And I think others just weren't prepared to go to war. And that's very much the effort that it took. I mean, we ran at the McHenry Group. We had an 8-month, every single morning, 6 a.m., we ran a war room every single day for 8 months straight. Every day, 6 a.m., all the teams, all the partners, or all the leaders and partners were on every single morning at 6 a.m. for 8 months straight. And we got so much better during that time. You know, so much better during that time. But yeah, there's a lot that haven't opened or that have closed, over 500.
Wow. So when you say you got on every morning, so that you guys all got on and talked about what was going on, what your game plan was, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, yeah, what, yeah, like what supply chain do we have available? What can we serve today? What's our best approach? What team do we have available? We were turning, literally taking servers and turning them into delivery drivers, and hosts were becoming cooks, and, you know, cooks were becoming leaders, and it was an amazing thing. And every day was a new day because some days we would find out that we had takeout containers. And so I'd buy 2 pallets of them and we'd have them delivered to Ginger Street downtown. And then we'd call the partners and everyone would kind of disperse to the various restaurants. And so, yeah, every day was an obstacle. And for whatever reason, it was like invigorating and gratifying because we were creating success in a time when it felt like society was just bowing out, like bowing out. And we were literally creating our, I think, our most valuable impacts during that time. And so, yeah, talking about astrology and talking about the opportunity, I think that there was a greater power saying, hey, you got to start caring more about people and relationships and engagements. Because I found myself being someone who loves neighborhoods so much and was running 30 minutes behind every opportunity. And I was driving out of my neighborhood as fast as I could. I'm leaving my house before my daughter wakes up. I'm getting home after she goes to bed. I'm flying across the country constantly. And I was just that guy, like just kinetic and moving, but I was surfacely engaging, right? I was high in and buying. And now it's like, no, I'm not only thoughtful and engaging, but I'm participating. And I feel like there's a bit of that energy out there. Like something most definitely spoke to me that it was time for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We couldn't go on existing the way that we had been you know?
Yeah.
We were getting so far away from what mattered the most. Mm. And it was just a reset button. I mean, of course, there's still people out there. We're on the planet of free will. You can still choose to stay unconscious and do
what a blessing that is too. Like what a blessing that is to be on the planet of free will. My goodness. Right?
Absolutely. Reminder everyone, we're on the planet of free will.
and don't F with people's free will. Like that's
don't.
One of the biggest conflicts personally. Yeah. It's
absolutely
no question.
So tell us about Healthy and Full.
Yeah, that was really cool. And it was birthed out of just principle. We saw an opportunity of a business partner of mine. And we saw an opportunity and we're at his house and it was like that, like cigar, glass of wine, whiteboard. I mean, it was one of those moments. It was like really free flowing and just felt like there's this opportunity right now. The solve to the health crisis of the pandemic is more labor, like less strategy, pop-up emergency tents, tons of people, quarantine, like just the solve to those problems were more hours and it was chaotic. And we were finding and hearing that these health providers and care workers, these frontline heroes, were working these swing shifts and not being able to leave the campus. Or when they did leave, they were quarantined with their families. And so we're hearing and feeling the chaos of this and realized that there was a real opportunity here. And that real opportunity was kind of threefold. Really, it was threefold. It was, let's identify an individual or a business in the community that's in a position where they can sponsor chef-made meals. These aren't like discounted $5 meals. These are chef-made meals. And so I went out and started seeking businesses and seeking individuals that could sponsor. And it started out with sponsor a lunch or sponsor a dinner. And that quickly revved up, but it was identifying that individual or business that could show up. And then it provided an opportunity to keep restaurants open, local restaurants open, and keep food on the table of those team members, employees of those various local restaurants. And then, of course, most importantly, it provided an opportunity that when Jen is there working this 24-hour swing shift, and she gets off her shift, she's not sitting down to eat a string cheese and a croissant. She sits down to a Thai basil chicken stir fry and a mushroom roll and a G bar made and packaged individually from Ginger Street, delivered hot. And has a thoughtful, encouraging note, like, thank you so much for your work and your presence. A little bit on a customized napkin and it's there ready for her. She can microwave it right away and she can eat it anytime. And it just took off like wildfire because it was a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. It allowed and celebrated somebody within the community. It kept food on the table and stability for our sacred restaurant workers. And it also provided an amazing chef-made meal for the individuals that are out there at the time, like taking the biggest risk. And when I say it took off like wildfire, it started with like one selfie or a vision, a selfie video to, by the end, I had businesses buying weeks worth of lunches and dinners for our frontline heroes. And we went from zero to thousands of meals within a 3 to 5 week period. And so we continued that. And it was a big part of our success. And then we got to the place where we were like showing up to the hospital and we couldn't feed any more people. And so I shut the program off because it's literally there to serve its purpose. And so I hope that there's never a big disaster or a pandemic or, some sort of crisis within our communities, but the Healthy and Full Initiative framework is there. So when that disaster comes, we'll turn it on and we're ready. Like we understand the conversion. We know how to get the team on board with it. And so I can assure the community of Utah that if a crisis happens, our restaurants will show up and we'll make sure that people get fed. No matter the crisis, we'll make sure that people get fed. And so it birthed an amazing initiative that we're super proud of.
Wow. Talk about showing up with love and not fear. You're like,
and we were driving those around. It was crazy. I'm like, I'm pointing to these hospitals. I'm carrying bags and people are looking at me like I'm crazy. And the next thing you know, it was like, I would walk out of these places and I still get a little bit emotional because I'm a very passionate guy. I'm a big passion guy. And people would clap for me. Hmm. And I'm like, I'm just delivering food. Mm-hmm. But a year and a half ago, Jen, delivering food to a hospital was worthy of celebration.
Yeah.
I would get people that would DM me on Instagram or call me. And I think we can understand kind of more of who these individuals are and kind of what, where they lean, but they would call me and say, hey, my friend told me that your restaurant is still open. I live in such and such, right? Not even living in Utah. Can I mail you money? Can I Venmo you guys? Can I Square you cash? Can we, like, I am just proud of you. And then I would get the mail that was like, You know, what am I doing? You're crazy. You're selfish. You're putting everybody at risk. I mean, some of the stuff I received during that time would blow your mind. But for every one bit of negative I received, I literally 50-fold we got a positive. And like, at what point did our community ever celebrate a delivery driver? Right? Like, I'm delivering meals and I just like, geez, this is so necessary. Like, I had so many things telling me that we were doing exactly what we needed to be doing. And it was hard as hell, but it was so rewarding at the same time. Yeah.
Well, this,
so that's a healthy and full. Yeah.
This situation has really helped us find those like-minded people and find our tribe, our community, because it's so easy. I mean, I grew up in religion and I left religion. And so there were certain things where it's like, oh, I can tell where this person's at and that person's at, right? And whether we're on the same page, not necessarily like that we all have to believe the exact same things, but it's just, you can find your tribe now and you have such a sense of appreciation for people that are like-minded and your tribe. You know what I mean? When you said that people are reaching out to you.
When it just becomes like less sort of convincing. Like when you start to duplicate in your likeness, you stop pitching who you are and what you believe. It's just, no, it's like, you start to share this best practice and it's been incredible. I can tell you this much, that Utah entrepreneurs specifically, I believe that the entrepreneur community richened deeply during the last 2 years, deeply. And those that survive, they have something like, they're a little bounce in their step. They're a little more mojo. There's a little more like, geez, I can give a shit about people and I can make great money and I can help other people win. And that's a big part that I think that didn't exist in entrepreneurship, was that so many entrepreneurs were out there like so independently, so selfishly working, which I think is so important as well. But there was far fewer back 2 years ago and leading up to now that really wanted to help other people universally and globally win. You could call those people out, the Gary V's of the world and others. And now there's like hundreds, you know, going on that literally are there to share best practice. And I believe that we need that correction to just richen our business communities, not only our neighborhoods and our true neighbors and our restaurant experiences and retail experiences, but also just our business experiences, our thought partnership, our involvement, our friends, our influences. All of that has richened, I think, deeply in so many ways. I also think that it cleaned the bracket. I think it also removed the garbage, a lot of it. And I think that's necessary. Like, I think there's a lot of people that actually, unfortunately, and I say this well, like, I think there was people gathering around tables that it just wasn't their seat. And I think this gave an opportunity to just clean the house too, like drop some dead weight.
Yeah. No, I agree with that big time. I mean, there's always ways to look at it. You know, you could look at it like, oh, it's so sad that these people are losing their businesses. Yes, I can see that. But also, people that weren't really in it with passion, they're being taken out. And like,
when you were fully exposed, when you were like, when it was fake, you were exposed. And I say this again appropriately, and I'm sure there could be a little backlash on this one, but there's always opportunity in crisis. Mm-hmm. There's opportunity to serve in crisis. There's opportunity to create value in crisis, right? Like, you know, let's not forget, like, during the economic downturn that was disastrous for so many, you know, there was many, many people buying up entire cities worth of homes and, you know, just crazy things that are happening. And not that I'm saying that I want to be a direct beneficiary of crisis. I just think that during crisis, we have an opportunity to build a plan and show up, or we have an opportunity to you know, fall victim and surrender. And I can tell you under all conditions that we're going to build a plan and show up big. And we're not going to apologize for the success that we create or the value that we create or the opportunity that we create because we went out and we freaking earned it during that time. We didn't wait for someone else to hand it to us. And I had so many that just, you couldn't believe that I would be out there, that I was showing up there in our own neighborhoods where I live. People were like, basically, you know, like, why are you still doing this? And today, you know, they want to sit on our panels and sit in the audience and listen to the things that we're doing. And I'm like, you had a firsthand take. You had to be the one that was up at 5 o'clock in the morning and wanted to get after it and do it like the rest of us. And I just think oftentimes we just cannot discount hard work. You can't discount just showing up for you and showing up for the things that you love and your missions and your visions and your schemes. Because you do it and you do it big, the rewards are just, I mean, I couldn't even predicted pre-pandemic that we would have the success that we're having today in under the best conditions, let alone what I believe were some of the worst in many, many ways statistically. And so, yeah, just being in a situation where you're just ready to show up regardless of what the environment is speaking towards, that's big. That's a recipe. That's a superpower, in my opinion.
Yeah. Heck yeah. That's what makes it even better, though. The fact that you launched like 6 weeks before the pandemic.
Yeah,
like,
Dirty Bird. Yeah.
That makes the story like so awesome. And, you know, I talk a lot about manifesting and I do coaching and I have a lot of real estate agents on my coaching load. And it's so fascinating. This is what I've learned. I talked to one client who says the market is really slow and their business is really challenged or struggling. And then I can talk to my next client who's like, they have so much business, they can't even keep up. And this is at the same day. I can talk
same
to
same market,
talk
probably, yeah. And the same market conditions.
Same market. So yeah. It tells me that it's not about the opportunities that are there, because they're all there. The bad, the good, and everything in between. It's what are they pulling in to experience?
It's here and here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here and here.
How do you manifest what you want? How do you, like, what's your best?
I'm so glad that you're asking me this, because I have so many like tangible experiences recent, right? Like, I have struggled in personal relationships. That's been like a struggle of mine. You know, when I thought I was a great father, I was actually a great provider. When I thought I was a great husband, I was actually a shitty husband. Like, it just, these interesting things, we create these narratives where we think we're great in ways. And guys like me, we're actually really good at telling ourselves that it's really good. Like, at least I know I am, very self-convincing. And I really got serious about I found myself in some personal situations and like one big thing I really started manifesting is like, I want to be around guys that love their families, that like honor their brides, that honor their children, that they have big acumen and big deal flow and they have research, they've run this, but they just love their people and they love their people crazy. And so I literally started visualizing being friends with those guys. I start like visualization is my greatest way to manifest. I create this tangible environment in advance and then I just work unwaveringly to get there. And it started with, I want to literally create richer and more fulfilling and really just greater integrity and better people and better honor for me and my friendships. And when I started doing that, I realized that I started projecting as well what success looked like, and not just like on paper or pro forma, but that I could take time and visualize what that looked like. And so I can tell you that the experience that you and your friends had at Sunday's Best, I had visualized that 2 years ago in my mind. I saw what Sunday's Best could be and what it ultimately is. And my team has shown up huge and far exceeded that. But I was able to visualize that and bring it to life. And so for me, when it comes to manifestation, it is visualization. Like, I just have gotten to this place with my mind that with enough focus, I can see it and almost taste it and feel it in advance, which makes the goal so clear for me. And then it just, as I do that, I find myself in that space. It brings the people, it brings the opportunity, it brings the deal flow. It just comes into line because I spend so much time making it clearer and clearer for me. And so my recipe for that is finding a place in your mind, in your environment, where you can truly visualize what success looks like for you personally and professionally. And it's an art. I really, truly believe it's an art. When I first started, it was literally like my brain, I think about songs and kids and music and things like roads and noises. And now it's like, I get to this place and I literally can just sink into it. But I'm telling you, it took time. Right. And it really, it's just there. It's the recipe. And that's what it is for me. I mean, visualization is crazy for me. Crazy.
Oh, Michael. I love that you said that
you're like, who is this guy? What's going on?
No, I want to clap when you're done talking. Yeah. Oh my gosh. But no, I'm serious. You're so interesting to talk to. And I live for conversations like this. Mm. I really do. I have all of these great conversations with people that are private. And that's why I launched the podcast, is because I'm like, oh, I love having these beautiful conversations about things that matter, but I want to do it where they're not private and I sure, can't share them with people, you know? But to me, that's exactly what matters in life. Like when we're on our deathbed, looking back at our life, yes, all of the success is fun and the money and those things are cool and exciting, but the relationship with, you know, your partner and your child, are you married?
I am. Yes.
Okay. So you're married and you have one child?
Yep.
Yes. That's what matters. I mean, that's like the most important things that we're going to be thinking about on our deathbed is our relationships and those magical moments with our children. And so the fact that you were like, I want to call in people that care about their spouse, that are good husbands and good fathers. Mm-hmm. To me, that tells me so much, which is why when I saw you, I was like, there's a light about this guy. There's something special about this guy. And it's not just about the glitz, the glam, the money. That's
sure,
cool.
Totally.
Awesome.
Well, and that was also like a big journey for me. And I might be going a little deep here, but I spent so much of my life, pretty much raised myself from 15 on. And I thought like the solve to every opportunity for me was just going to be money. And money creates choices. And I love money and I love choices and I love opportunity. But I drove that car long before I could afford it. And I wore that watch because I wanted people to accept me. You know, like I just, for the longest time, I lived in this space of like doing things. And I'm saying this admittedly, like doing this and wanting these jobs and these opportunities so that more people would like gravitate towards me or think it was awesome. And what I realized over time, this like hard reality of like buying self-warrant and getting basically saying, hey, I want all these people to love me and appreciate me and look at all this stuff that I have instead of like, actually, I love me. Like I love that guy. And that guy shows up for him and he shows up for the people that he loves. And this is a recent, more recent journey for him. I'm talking like last 5 years. And it's crazy that the more self-aware that I became and I become, the things that just don't matter. Like the time now that I can't afford those cars, I actually still want to drive them. I have great stuff or those things have happened, but it's like, really, it took me finding myself in a situation where my wife and daughter were like, I'm done. Like, go have your businesses, go do your thing. Because none of that house, that neighborhood, yes, the stabilities, the comforts, all of that is awesome. And I thought I was being this amazing person. The reality was like, at the end of the day, Christy's just like, I just actually want you. I actually want you to participate. I want your thoughtfulness. I want that mind share. And I'm like, I've had this script wrong the whole time. I'm out here working my ass off to buy all these things and vacations and cars and all the stuff that I feel like is most important at the end of the day. Someone's like, oh, I just actually want human connection. I want someone to like be thoughtful with me. And what's wild about this, Jen, is that the moment, and this was big pandemic time for me, for years, I put my business before everything. My family, my daughter, my friends. I was the guy who was like never at Thanksgiving dinner because I was serving everybody else Thanksgiving. I was never the guy that was home because I wanted the next deal. I'm just in the chaos of it. And it wasn't until I found myself in these scenarios, some of what I touched on briefly, but basically like thinking I have this empire, but yet I'm by myself. And I actually don't have a whole lot. I'm actually pretty much on my own because I've sabotaged most of those relationships. I found myself in this place like, this is just not worth it. But the moment that I shifted that priority and I started participating with the people that I love first, my businesses exponentially grew. And who would have thought the recipe was like making sure that I was home for dinner or that I was the first one up to make breakfast, not get out of the house to hit the gym to go to this spot, but that my daughter knew, that Christy knew, that my friends know, that people that are closest to me know that I love and appreciate them. And that I'm there, that literally prioritizing my family is probably the biggest thing I ever did for the success of our businesses in so many ways. And so again, I went a little deeper there because you hit a thread with me, but it wasn't always this way for me. And I don't believe I've arrived in any way. You're just kind of meeting the evolution of where I've been to where I am today, that it wasn't that long ago that I was like standing in that space by myself, realizing that like, I have so much more to give and to participate so differently. And so I work on it and I literally every day I work on it. I work on how I can participate differently. And it doesn't come without failure. It doesn't come without mistakes. I just show up to it. And I actually give myself a chance to live in the shit too. Like I give myself a chance to live in what didn't work where before I was so damn good at just like artfully compartmentalizing that and sweeping it away and just moving on. And now like I actually give myself a chance to sit. We use that as a phrase, like in our group, like just give yourself a chance to sit in the shit a little bit. And like, okay, like, all right, cool. Now pick yourself up and get back after it. But respect those hard times because they really are there to teach you if you're willing to be taught. They're there to actually show you something, you know, a light if you choose. I spent so much of my life just disregarding how important that is. And I can tell you, I look forward to my shitty days as much as I look forward to my good ones because my shitty ones help me accelerate my good ones. They really do. Just, I feel like for every shitty day, I get 10 good ones.
Yeah, that's a good ratio.
Yeah, it's just, you know, whether that's true in essence or not, a little arbitrary on the number, but the feeling is right. Like, yeah. I feel like when I sit in the shit a bit, I get better.
Yeah, just don't stay in the shit. Get up.
Totally. Wow. Yeah, when I say like sit in the shit, I'm saying like an hour. You know, I'm saying a few minutes. Like, I don't know what it's like to be there long. There's something to be taught when you can recognize and appreciate it for a moment.
And what a gift, though, that like with Christy, that she said, all I want is you. I mean, what a gift to have that kind of love that she's like, this stuff is great, but I want you.
Especially after all the shit that I, especially after all the shit that I, you know, have drug us through. And in no way am I perfect even now. Like, there's just things, right? All relationships, all individuals, all moments, like separations, divorces, you know, like good times, bad times, hard times, issues, right? And, you know, just the evolution of that. And yeah, I mean, anyone who's listening in right now, if you're in the middle of the shit in any way, like with the right mindset, the right visualization and just responsibility, like things evolve. And I feel like the most beauty, the most fruit follows, I think, the most adverse situations. Like, I think that like some of my best customers today, Jen, are the ones where we completely failed on our first experience, like completely missed it. And now they're like our brand fans. They're like evangelists for us at this point. But oftentimes they start out adverse. Like, I think some of our biggest fans, and I would say almost all of our biggest fans, have come from, you know, a place of you know, adversity in some way. Like, we repaired it through an email. We made a new delivery. We rescued it at the table. You know, we welcomed you back in. It's whatever it might be. And I feel that way, you know, relationally as well. Like, I think oftentimes it takes those big moments for us to pivot in behavior and opportunities. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm no pro by any ways. This is just my own opinion, right? So
no, it's such valuable information. I believe that, you know, when you talk about relationships, I believe relationships are the hardest thing to master, but they're the most rewarding. And I mean, they are, they just are, you know? So when you said, you know, when you mess up that you can start over and you can correct.
Own your shit and move on. Yeah.
Own it. I love that. Okay. I could literally talk to you all day. I love it. But I want to ask one question to end today. So if you could give the world any message, what is your message to the world? What do you want them to know?
This is so big on me right now. And I feel like at times I can jump right up and be the locker room pep talk. And I think right now, the biggest bit of advice that I can give to anyone, and I don't care at what point in your life you are, some of my most affluent friends are the most miserable, right? I mean, literally most miserable. And I'm talking hidden addictions and challenges and the things that go on. I think if I can give any bit of advice right now, it's just believe in that person that you see in the mirror. And it takes work. Like, truly start to build a relationship with that person. If you have one, great, strengthen it and further it. And if you don't, start. Because it opens the door to so many opportunities. And the biggest one is just self-love. And there's no way I can show up for Jen and her friend's table side and engage positively and smile and be the best part of someone else's day if I'm the shittiest part of my own. And we're in direct control of that. And so my biggest advice is just show up and believe in that person that you see in the mirror and do the work. Because you will show up huge for yourself, which then in turn allows you to show up big for your missions and your visions and the people that you love. And it's been a game changer for me. So that's my bit of advice for the world.
That is the best message. It is. That's it. That's all there is, right? Yeah. That's all there is. So, wow. It's been such a pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much.
Of course. Likewise.
Here, and thank you for sharing yourself with everyone. You're amazing. And I'm definitely bringing back my friends. We'll come in. I'll bring my husband. Yeah. He would love the experience. Yeah. So definitely.
Well, I would love that. And please, anyone who's listening, if you see me in the dining room, I'm not, like, call me to your table. Let me know you heard this. Like, engage with me. I love that. I'll love to share that. And message me on Instagram as well. Like, it's the only social platform that I manage myself directly. So if you see me on social, on Instagram, that's me, Michael McHenry. Message me. I don't know that I get back to everyone, but if there's something you want to ask or you see some value there, like, reach out to me and I'll do my best to get back to you for sure.
And we'll also put your information in the show notes for people to connect with you.
So, oh, cool. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, Jen, thank you so much. Much love.
Okay, everyone. Bye for now.
Do you have a coach? I would love to take this journey with you to dive deep and start to shift those areas to create a life that truly honors you. I'll meet you on that bridge at whatever level you are ready, with either group or one-on-one coaching. You can check out my programs at jensuliafu.com/programs. Also, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and rate and review this show and give me your feedback. Also, please share this with your friends and family and be a lighthouse out in the world. Thanks for joining me.